going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Suddenly, the war in Syria looks more complicated than ever. Europe reeling over refugees. U.S. efforts to arm an opposition collapsing. Russian military moving in, beefing up behind their old ally, Assad. And the U.S. blindsided by news that Russia and Syria and Iran and our ally Iraq are coordinating out of Baghdad to fight ISIS. Russia is making a big play. Washington looks like it's scrambling. This hour on Point, the Russia factor in Syria and beyond. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Can the U.S. work with the Russians in Syria? Do we have to now, whether we like it or not? Has this situation become so bad that Russia, the U.S., Iran, and Europe, everyone has to sit down and really finally work together to keep this from spinning out of control? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from New York is Farnaz Fasihi. She is senior writer, former deputy Mideast bureau chief for the Wall Street Journal. We've talked with her many times out of Beirut, Baghdad. This week, she's been watching events as they unfold at the United Nations, where Barack Obama and Vladimir Putin met yesterday. Farnaz, welcome back to On Point. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
How would you characterize the messages that each of these two leaders are bringing to the UN, to the world community there? What's Obama trying to get across? What's Putin trying to get across?
Well, I think the messages that we're seeing is very focused on the themes, emerging themes of the Middle East, particularly the need to counter and fight ISIS or the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. Russia has been very vocal and open about the fact that it's stepping up its military presence in both Iraq and Syria with the intention to fight ISIS and terrorism. And the U.S. also wants to do the same, but where the difference lies in the outcome of a political process. The United States and Mr. Obama have said that they don't think that the political future of Syria can have President Assad in it. They want Assad removed, a political transition. And Russia very much says that removing Assad now will further destabilize Syria.
Let's hear a little bit of that back to back. First, President Obama talking to the General Assembly yesterday.
The United States is prepared to work with any nation, including Russia and Iran, to resolve the conflict. But we must recognize that there cannot be, after so much bloodshed, so much carnage, a return to the pre-war status quo.
In other words, it can't be Bashar al-Assad, who the United States has said for years now must go, who's the last one standing, if and when this gets somehow wrapped up. Vladimir Putin saying, not so fast, let's not back off too quickly from the Syrian government, Assad.
Today we provide military and technical assistance both to Iraq and Syria and many other countries of the region who are fighting terrorist groups. We think it is an enormous mistake to refuse to cooperate with the Syrian government and its armed forces who are violently fighting terrorism face to face.
Fighting terrorism, backing Assad. Farnaz Fasihi at the UN, who appears to be winning more hearts and minds, or the ones that matter when it comes to this zone of conflict?
I think what's there's a turning point now in the alliances in the Middle East that's very important. Iraq and Syria, after many years of seeing the U.S. as their main patron and the person, the country that they would turn to, are now shifting their alliance toward Russia, as Iran has done for many years since the collapse of the Soviet Union. And that's very noteworthy because You know, Russia is coming in saying, we're going to give you military assistance, we're going to share intelligence, we're going to help you battle ISIS and these terrorists, and we're not making any preconditions to do this, which is removing Assad or you know, anything else. And I think this is a key moment for the U.S. because it will, if this trend continues, the U.S. will have less and less influence there.
You spent a lot of time in this region. Is it surprising to you? Is it shocking? I mean, the U.S. pumped money and blood in here for years, and then it seems in the last couple of weeks you've got Russia setting up a control room in Baghdad. How deep is this relationship? How big a turn is it on the part of the Iraqi government?
I think the Iraqi government it has been frustrated with the U.S.'s military assistance. I mean, you have to take into consideration that the U.S. Failed in the Iraq War. They spent trillions of dollars, 100,000 boots, countless lives, and they were, you know, ultimately they were not able to bring stability. They were not able to root out the terrorism and the insurgency that came up after the Iraqi invasion. So there's a, you know, there's kind of a love and hate relationship between the Iraqi government and the U.S. They don't trust that the U.S. can really restore stability. And in the past year, since the fall of Mosul, they've repeatedly asked Americans to set up funding, to set up military assistance, and it just hasn't happened. So this is, in a way, saying to the Americans that we are tired of waiting for you, and we're now going to turn towards Russia and see what happens.
Kind of a remarkable turn of events in a week when both leaders are at the United Nations. Farnaz Fasihi covering it all for the Wall Street Journal there in New York. Farnaz, great to hear from you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Let me turn now to Julianne Smith, former Deputy National Security Advisor, former Acting National Security Advisor to Vice President Joe Biden, former Principal Director for European and NATO Policy in the Office of the Secretary of Defense in the Pentagon. Julianne Smith, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
What's happening?
What's happening is Russia right now is making a big power play intended to send a signal back to Washington and to the West more broadly that we can't isolate them and that they have the ability to deploy assets on their terms and on their timeline. They have the ability to surprise us. They can build new relationships as they are right now with the Iraqis, and that we shouldn't underestimate their place in global politics. And they're trying to tell the world right now that they have the solution for Syria, that they are going to work with Iran and the Iraqis and the Syrians and share intelligence, and they are going to insert themselves militarily into this conflict and support Assad to bring about some sort of stability.
Like the anti-Hitler coalition, Putin told the General Assembly yesterday. Let's listen for just a moment through an interpreter here.
We must join efforts to address the problems that all of us are facing and create a genuinely broad international coalition against terrorism. Similar to the anti-Hitler coalition, it could unite a broad range of forces that are resolutely resisting those who, just like the Nazis, sow evil and hatred of humankind.
Julian Smith, is this credible? Vladimir Putin, who's backed Assad, whose presence President Obama says has been the core irritant that led all of this to unfold so bloodily. Is he a credible leader of an anti-ISIS effort now?
He's not a credible leader. I think what he's right about is the fact that this problem needs immediate global attention. And I think we were all kidding ourselves to assume that we could somehow contain this conflict and isolate its consequences for the wider region and for places like Europe. Obviously, that's not turned out to be the case. He and others are right, as well as President Obama, to say we need new focus on this conflict. We do need to bring together the rather unsavory cast of characters in the region to talk about this conflict. Where he's wrong is his assumption that somehow the solution has to include President Assad. And there, Russia has supported Assad for years on end. We have not seen any ability for Assad to bring about stability. Quite the contrary, he is killing tens of thousands of people in his own country. And Russia's backing of Assad is part of the problem in how we ended up with ISIS in the first place. So I think we do have a major disagreement between Russia and Syria and the rest of us on Assad's future. And that's going to be the biggest sticking point going forward. I think what the president tried to do yesterday is to say, yes, President Putin, we agree with you. We should start talking about fostering some sort of political settlement inside Syria. But no, we don't translate our desire to fight ISIS into a love for President Assad. That's not how it works. And so we need to square that circle, and that's going to be the challenge going forward.
Is the U.S. going to join this effort that now includes Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Russia against ISIS? Are we going to be in there in this so-called control room of intelligence officers in Baghdad, even in the green? I don't know if it's in the green zone or not. I don't know where it is. You're going to have U.S. officers in there?
Well, look, the United States is already fighting ISIS, so we're doing it today. The Russians are contemplating taking on a stronger role. The intelligence sharing can be a bit overstated. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Russians have been sharing intelligence with the Syrians and the Iranians for quite some time. The new twist, of course, is putting us all on notice that they folded the Iraqis in. But I think we shouldn't underestimate the value of the bilateral relationship that Abadi has with the United States as well. They value that. It's not perfect, as was noted earlier in the show, and it's had a number of ups and downs. But I think we should be careful about overestimating what exactly this means about the Iraqi-Russia relationship.
Is Russia in there because the U.S. has blown its hand in this region?
Russia is in there because it sees an opportunity to engage itself in a way that will hopefully distract the world's attention from its rather aggressive behavior in its immediate neighborhood, most notably Ukraine. It's also in there right now because it has a strong interest in maintaining its military base. This is the only country in the Middle East where Russia has any sort of a ground presence, and it wants to ensure that going forward. It also appreciates the fact that we all now, in light of the unbelievable refugee crisis that is unfolding, we all believe that we have to now turn our attention to a political settlement, and Russia wants to ensure that it's at the table.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the U.S. and Russia sparring over strategy approaches on Syria, ISIS, Bashar al-Assad, and more. Russian planes and troops now in Syria, Russian intelligence in Baghdad, Putin and President Obama at the United Nations this week. Julianne Smith is with us, former Deputy National Security Advisor. She is former also Principal Director, European NATO Policy, Office of the Secretary of Defense in the Pentagon. Lots of critical attention to the U.S. efforts there over the years. Most recently, troops trained up by the U.S., $500 million spent, and off they went. A lot of arms lost in that latest mess. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Samantha Power, was talking with ABC's Martha Raddatz on Sunday. Raddatz pressed her on the American embarrassing failures to train a viable opposition in Syria, and Power conceded the point.
Lots but it doesn't seem to be working so far. We understand
totally,
the reasons for totally doing
fair.
It.
Totally fair. It's obviously even more complex, I think, than we would have envisaged. By the same token, this is a risk management exercise.
Doesn't seem to be working so far. Samantha Power, totally fair. Totally fair. Vladimir Putin pointed a finger of responsibility for all this at those who supported democratic revolutions in the Middle East when he talked to the UN General Assembly yesterday.
I cannot help asking those who have caused this situation, do you realize now what you've done? But I'm afraid no one is going to answer that. Indeed, policy is based on self-conceit and belief in one's exceptionality and impunity have never been abandoned.
Self-conceit, exceptionality, impunity, the kind of words that Vladimir Putin likes to push America's way. Speaking to the General Assembly yesterday, Julianne Smith, standby in Washington. With us right now from Norman, Oklahoma, is Joshua Landis, director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma, big Syria thinker and observer, author of the blog Syria Comment. President of the Syrian Studies Association. Josh Landis, welcome back to On Point. Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Can you remind us of what Russia now has where in Syria when it comes to a military footprint?
Well, Russia doesn't have a great deal, but they are shoring up the Assad regime. They've sent in about 30 extra airplanes, some helicopters, lots of arms. They're building an airport in the north of Syria near Latakia, a very vulnerable city where Assad has a lot of importance, and also along at Tartus, a big naval base where it refits ships.
Well, this is Russia's only naval base in the Mediterranean, what, 50 miles or so from Latakia?
It is.
If
I could jump in and interrupt you for a second.
Yeah, please.
You know, we've heard Julian Smith articulate the U.S. government line on this. Mm-hmm. Russia, I think that Putin would look at this and say, take a very different line. He would say, look, America wants to promote democracy, this revolutionary ideology in the Middle East, and it's been willing to overturn regimes in order to pursue its ideological interests. Saddam Hussein, Gaddafi in Libya, the Yemeni government. And in each one of these situations, you haven't gotten smooth regime change. You haven't gotten better government. What you get is a crumbled state. You get ISIS infesting the country, radical jihadists moving in. This is a completely failed policy. We have to back strongmen. Yes, they kill people and they're mean. They're like little Titos or so forth. But that's the reality of the Middle East. The Middle East is not ready for democracy. We need strong men. And, of course, he's a strong man in Russia. He believes in this, and he thinks it's the best way forward. America does not believe in it. We think that we can get rid of these guys, introduce democracy, power sharing, and a better form of government. And it's a fundamental ideological disagreement.
But, Josh, the whole message, at least as interpreted by most in the West, if we want to use that term, of the Arab Spring, was that this long era of strong men cannot go on, could not go on forever, that it created all kinds of bloody unrest on the side in itself. I mean, we saw it in Egypt, we saw it in Syria. That if that had been allowed to work itself out politically in Syria without the heavy Assad hand on here and elsewhere across the region, over time you'd bleed off a lot of this tension, you'd have a healthier region.
That is absolutely true. And we've seen the Middle East explode, but we look at the realities of Syria today. The moderate, liberal, middle-class Syrians have fled the country. They're gone. America tried to organize them with the Syrian National Council, the Syrian opposition.
Yeah.
All over. We've done this in several different iterations, and they have crumbled. Who is on the ground today? There are strong men. There is Caliph Baghdadi, who chops people's heads off, the head of ISIS, and he owns 50% of the territory. There is Golani, the head of the al-Qaeda branch, Nusra, who is at the head of a big coalition, Jaish al-Fatah, that owns a big hunk of territory in the northwest part of Syria. Those are the people we're looking at to substitute for Assad. If we destroy Assad today, as our government wants to do and says they want to do at any rate, who's going to take Damascus, a city of 5 million people? It's going to be one of these two strongmen, and they're going to be able to torture America from that position of power in a major Arab capital.
But that's the Assad line that's gone back for years, Hama rules and all
the
rest, death upon death.
It's not wrong, and the question is who made it right? And that's the big, you know, is it the circumstances of the Middle East or is it Assad's fault and Russia's fault? And America's line is it's Assad's fault. And Assad says it's not my fault. It's that the Middle East is dysfunctional and they need me.
Josh,
that's the thought.
Julian Smith come in here. Is this American naivete? I mean, go all the way back to George W. Bush. We will remake this region in a democratic model, starting with Iraq. You know, Saddam Hussein and on we go. Has the U.S. been dreaming?
Right. So we have to be careful about how we're characterizing this line that Putin used about the dangers of exporting revolution. I mean, obviously, I think President Obama would agree with President Putin that the Iraq War was a mistake. We know that, right? And yes, we
did intervene in Libya. But Putin's not wrong to say that was an American idea. It was George
Bush's
idea to bring democracy.
But let's step back for a minute. I think Putin is trying to make the argument that the United States is solely responsible for the Arab Spring. And there, I really have to take disagreement with that. In Syria, the United States was not fueling that revolution. That was started as a peaceful demonstration. The U.S. was not involved in that one way or another. In Egypt, we were not engaged in that, what happened in the streets. And so, yes, we did intervene militarily in Libya, and we can talk about the failed policies on the back end of that mission. But this assumption that the United States has been fueling revolution all across the entire region is just not based on fact. It really isn't.
I want to bring John
and
Cornwell.
For him, sorry, one more point on the hypocrisy of Putin to stand up and wag his finger at us about the dangers of foreign interference when he literally has troops on the ground inside Ukraine right now.
And Crimea
is
in his pocket. Chris in Jamestown, New York. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great program. And really the best program on radio and TV overall, if you ask me, when it comes to news.
Thanks, Chris. What do you think right here on this one?
Well, you know, I'm thinking that Assad is perhaps looked at by the Russians as the Stalin of the Middle East, of Syria, whereas we're looking at him as another Saddam Hussein. I think we're eventually going to come to terms with Russia, and it's going to be a world war, unfortunately, because this IS is just not going away. I think overall, with an alliance between the United States and Russia, China, and their inability to go by international law and regulations will become the next big enemy.
Leave China aside for a second, but you see the United States ultimately as going sort of shoulder to shoulder with Russia here to fight ISIS. Josh Landis, you know the region well. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I think that's what the West is struggling to do now. We've seen the Prime Minister in Great Britain and France, the President of France and Germany all say, we've got to put the question of regime change in Syria aside for the time being. We're not going to let it go. We're going to insist that Assad go, but for the time being, we're going to put it aside. And that's the sort of climb down they're seeing from the West. They're not going to change their ideological line and say, we're not for human rights, democracy, and getting rid of this horrible dictator. They're going to keep that discourse going, but at the same time, they're going to be working closer with Russia on ISIS question.
Mohammed in Lincoln, Nebraska. Mohammed, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. This is Mohammed Khalaf. I have a couple of points. If you please give me a time, I want to address it.
Mohammed, I just want to make clear, I see a note here that you worked with the U.S. Army as a translator in Iraq for half a dozen years, so you know the region. Take us right to your point.
My point is, when we was working with U.S. Army, we was based on one policy and one legend, is to fight ISIS and support Iraqi government to rebuild their force again after 2003. And that legend was 100% successfully worked well towards built that. Unfortunately, U.S. government supported militants, supported Iraqi prime minister who is belong to militant. That leads everything to collapse down. All these casualties gone for nothing. All the U.S. casualties, I mean. And all these forces who fight 8 or 7 years in Iraq against ISIS, unfortunately, go for nothing.
Mohammed, that is hard to hear, and we see you're making a continuity between, I guess, al-Qaeda in Iraq and ISIS that ultimately emerged. Let me just ask you a simple question. You spent a lot of time in the region. Do you think Russia coming in this way will help bring stability and hopefully not just tyranny but some better outcome to this region or not, Mohammed?
Russia took advantage of the U.S. fails in Iraq. They took advantage in the right and best time now. They choose a time after 12 years. They want to tell U.S. government that what you fight us in during the Soviet Union, we are fighting you now with ISIS. Russia has taken advantage of all those. Well, the majority of ISIS came from the Russian territories, and they are speak Russian here in Iraq.
Yeah.
And now Russians take advantage of that.
Mohammed, I appreciate your call. We're looking at Russia and the United States now sparring, maybe soon cooperating somehow over the Middle East and ISIS. Gosh, it's hard. It's hard to know quite where to go. The United States is still saying Assad has to go, but people are saying, well, maybe Josh Landis, maybe that would mean he would go, but everybody around him, there'd be some kind of deal where they would stay, so the regime continuity would sort of be there. This morning on MSNBC's Morning Joe, you had John Kerry, Secretary of State, responding here when asked if there was a possibility of a coalition, the U.S., with Russia to fight against the Islamic State.
Providing there, and this is on the table, if you can resolve this transition of Assad, that is absolutely possible. But you have to have a clarity for everybody about the way forward.
Julianne Smith, does the U.S. really want to work with Russia here? Do they have to now? And how far would they go in sort of obscuring, you know, maybe Assad goes, but the rest of his regime stays. He lives on the Black Sea, but the regime stays. Would the U.S. go for that?
Well, first, to your first question, yes, tactically, we've got to cooperate with these guys. If Russia is going to take on a more robust military role inside Syria, we have to ensure, first and foremost, that our planes aren't colliding in air. I mean, this is a very small country. The U.S. is already engaged with other coalition partners, and we'll have to make sure that to the extent that Russia is going to be engaged against ISIS, there is some coordination there. Secondly, on the broader question about where we go from here, I think, yes, we do have to sit down and talk about whether or not certain elements of the regime could perhaps be preserved if that would enable the Russians to sign off on Assad's departure. We'll have to talk about specific individuals. The Russians will be very interested in who would be put in control and what kind of existing relationship they have with that person. They're obviously going to want to exert a lot of leverage over whoever is now in power. And so these are the conversations that we're going to have. And this is what we're trying to do going forward. And I think that's exactly what Secretary Kerry was trying to highlight in that interview.
I want to pull the lens back here, if we may. I want to go to Berlin and John Kornblum, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs, former U.S. Ambassador to Germany and the OSCE, currently in Berlin at Noor LLP International Law Firm there. Ambassador Kornblum, thank you very much for joining us. What do you see Russia as up to here, sir?
Well, I think that Russia is trying to do a number of things. Putin is trying to get back into the game, so to speak. He's been isolated by the West for 18 months or more, and he's trying to get back into the game. I think also that Russia has real interests. We shouldn't forget that Russia has a very large Islamic population, and they're worried about ISIS. I think we can talk about all the details of this, but I think the real story here is that the big powers, if you want to call us that, for the last year, maybe 2 years, have been eyeing each other, not taking a direct role in what's going on. And now we're doing what so very often happens in diplomacy. I was in the same kind of situation in the 90s in the Balkan Wars, where you finally understand you have to deal with each other.
Is there an end game that these two great nations can agree on, though?
There probably will be. At first, I wouldn't see it too dramatically. Russia has not somehow now kicked the United States off the table. I personally think we've been a little bit too slow on this, but that does happen sometimes. I think that the power relationships remain the same. The United States also really represents the Europeans in this because they themselves don't quite know how to be involved. And so if there is careful diplomacy involved here, and one can hope there will be, and some openness on all sides, maybe we can, in fact, move to an improvement of the situation. But I wouldn't see this as some great big Russian power move. I wouldn't see it as a great loss by the United States. It's the kind of diplomatic maneuvering which goes on when you have a very difficult situation and people take some time to figure out what to do about it.
Is this some magic partnership? If the two do work together, is ISIS suddenly doomed? I mean, the U.S. on its own certainly seems to have barely scratched it.
Well, I can't speak to that. I mean, I'm not the expert on this. What I do know about is how countries get together to make these things work. And certainly one can't fault the United States for not being engaged in Syria. Over the last 25 years, American Secretary of States have gone to the edge of exhaustion trying to work with the Assad family and trying to maintain stability in Syria in the context of at least a slightly democratic structure. So it's not that the United States is absent from the game. It's that this last couple of years, adding the Ukrainian situation to it, has in fact confused people, I think. But at the same time, we just concluded a very important agreement with Iran. The Secretary of State has been tireless in dealing with Israel and Palestine. So it's complex, but it's not the kind of dramatic situation that the press is sometimes playing.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the U.S. and Russia sparring over strategy approaches on Syria, ISIS, Assad, more, maybe moving toward getting together at the same time, looking at Russian planes and troops now in Syria, Russian intelligence working in Baghdad, Putin and Obama at the United Nations this week. Ambassador John Kornblum joins us from Berlin, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs, former U.S. Ambassador to Germany, to the OSCE. Julianne Smith is with us, all kinds of positions with Vice President Biden on security, former Principal Director for European NATO Policy in the Secretary of Defense's office at the Pentagon. Josh Landis is with us from the University of Oklahoma, Director of the Center for Middle East Studies there, spent a lot of time in Syria. At the U.N., President Obama talked about it, but he wanted to talk also about Ukraine and Russia's aggression, he said there.
The Ukrainian people are more interested than ever in aligning with Europe instead of Russia. Sanctions have led to capital flight, a contracting economy, a fallen ruble, and the emigration of more educated Russians.
Yeah, fine, Putin might have been thinking, but what he said was, you've got to watch out for the blowback from the situation in Syria. Do you want these fighters to come back to your country? He doesn't want them coming back to Russia, he says.
We cannot allow these criminals who've already tasted blood to return back home and continue their evil doings. No one wants this to happen, does he?
Ambassador Kornblum, John Kornblum in Berlin, how's Europe looking at this? If they have sort of worked with the United States, who's happy to see Russia getting involved? Who's not? And does this tie their hands on resisting Russian moves in Ukraine?
Well, that's a very good question. At first place, they're looking on with a certain amount of fear and wondering what's going to happen. Secondly, let's not forget that Europe right now is totally consumed by the refugee crisis. This is the story number one.
But they're yet another, knock-on effect of the chaos.
That's right, exactly that. And but Europe is also painfully aware of its inability to influence things very much. And you had the spectacle, if you want to call it that, last week when the British and French governments called for airstrikes in Syria and the German government came out very strongly against them. In other words, Europe finds it hard to have a strategy in these kinds of very messy military geopolitical things. They're hoping that the United States will make it work for them. At the same time, I think you would probably find that most Europeans would be more willing to cut some slack, as we would say, for Putin than the United States has been so far. In other words, I think that the American administration has the lead here. I hope they're consulting carefully with their European allies because we'll need them if implementation starts happening. But Europe so far sees itself on the fringes and is not very happy about that.
Here's skepticism on Twitter from our listeners. One, who in their right minds thinks invading countries and propping up dictators will lead to democracy and stability? Kind of critical, I guess, of the Putin view there. But here another on the website, Charlie writes, is the Islamic world capable of creating and living in democratic societies? Might not be something their culture can comprehend and endorse. It's been American policy. Josh Landis, what about just practically on the ground? Is there reason to think that Russia getting involved, and let's say the U.S. does work out some way to avoid conflict and whether directly or indirectly kind of work with the Russians, does that leave ISIS quaking in its boots? Does that mean ISIS is really in trouble? The U.S. alone is a pretty powerful country, spent a lot of money, and seems to have barely touched it.
Well, it does. It does a lot of damage to ISIS because the United States has been loath to help the Shiite government in Baghdad fire up its very sectarian militias to reconquer ISIS territory. America has bombed a little bit, but they don't really want to get into it until there is a government that shares power with Sunnis. And so you've had little action in Iraq, and the Russians would be much less discerning, for example, about just supporting a Shiite sectarian government to smash ISIS.
But does that mean a successful policy? I mean, those Shiite militias would go into towns, burn things down, leave the Sunnis really angry. We saw how effective Russia was in Afghanistan after all of its years in smashing there. Not that we're going to get out unbruised, but does that mean the Russian way works or just for a minute?
Well, that's the question. I mean, that's what they did in Chechnya. And you have to decide what you want. If you want a democratic government, then you don't do anything. You sit around and you don't support either side. And that's what we've been doing for the last 5 years. And it's led to this complete meltdown, ongoing civil war, where the great powers all choose a different militia to support, and we get complete chaos. This is the dilemma for the West. Will they support a dictator?
Julianne Smith, is this the fork in the road where Washington has to, if it wants to work with Russia and maybe find a way out of this, it has to say, okay, forget the democracy, let's smash them, whatever that means.
Well, I don't think John Kerry or any member of the administration right now has a strong focus on bringing democracy to Syria. Right now, we want to bring about an end to this conflict, mm-hmm. and we want to find some sort of power-sharing agreement among multiple players. But
we haven't been willing to do that by getting in behind Assad and helping him smash it.
Yeah, well, what you just heard is exactly on point. This is the quintessential question for the United States. We've had several interventions over the last couple of years. We had a full-on intervention, 10-year mission in Iraq and Afghanistan. We had a very short pinprick operation in Libya. And we've had Syria, where the United States has decided to do essentially very little, next to nothing. All three of those have not produced the intended consequences. And so for the United States going forward, and for the West more broadly, the question is, how can we bring our power to bear in these types of internal conflicts to bring about the results we'd like to see on the back end? And frankly, you know, a lot of us are shrugging our shoulders. We can't find the perfect diagnosis. We can't find the perfect toolkit to deal with Yemen, Libya, Syria, any of these conflicts. And we've tried it all. I mean, I don't think anybody feels like Iraq and Afghanistan was a roaring success. And yet we're frustrated with our inaction in Syria as well. And so this is one of the questions. I mean, you'll certainly see this play out in our political debates, but around the world, countries are asking themselves, what's the right mix of intervention, if any?
Ambassador Kornblum, is Europe now ready to say, hey, Russia, U.S., go off, smash things, do whatever you need. We can't handle these refugees. Forget about democracy. I mean, no, I don't know who would think the heart bleeds for the people of this region. I don't know who thinks it's a long-term solution, but are things so unsettled that Europe won't judge?
Well, I do think that Europeans would probably be more willing to somehow deal with Assad than the United States may or may not be right now. We don't really know what our own people are saying. But I think, again, the point for the United States is to make sure that it works with the European allies to bring them along to whatever it and together with them they believe is necessary. This has been, if I may say so, a weakness of this administration. They haven't been very good at bringing the European allies along, and they've paid the price for it. Now the Europeans are faced with this really very, very terrible refugee crisis with thousands still coming in every day. And so they're looking very much to the United States to help them not only deal with the refugees, but also to stem the flow by improving things in the region. So I think that our allies will be more or less ready to do whatever we think is necessary. But I hope that we will, for once, do some very broad consultations with them so we have a closed front rather than one in which everybody's saying what they think is the best thing to say at the moment.
Let's go to Dimitri in Toronto, Canada. Dimitri, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I think that the The problem is this, that after Afghanistan, after Iraq, after Libya, this was all regime change, and as your expert echoed this problem, I think that within certain American foreign policy elites, there is frustration because the regime change roadshow has stopped in Ukraine and Syria. So this was the final installment of this show. And now America has felt the blowback from a Russian reaction to this constant need to overthrow regimes that are based on totalitarian principles. But if you decapitate Saddam Hussein, you also destroy the state, because the tyrant and the totalitarian system is the state. And if you remove Mr. Assad, President Assad, the same problem will happen as in Iraq, as in Libya, that you will have a power vacuum filled by the most fundamental militarists and extremists.
Dimitri, we've got it. Julianne, does that mean the new U.S. policy has to be, you know, tyrants, fine by us, we figured out we don't know how to remove them without crumbling? That hardly sounds appealing.
No, I think what we heard, the quote from President Obama yesterday was, when a dictator slaughters tens of thousands of his own people, it's not a matter of one nation's internal affairs. And I think that was a signal to Russia that we will not allow Assad to stay in power. Can we go after every dictator around the world? Absolutely not. But we're talking about a situation now that is unraveling and having very severe consequences and ramifications, not only for the wider Middle East, but obviously Europe as well. And we have to figure out some sort of solution here.
I mean, you've got Human Rights Watch saying at the UN that the barrel bombs dropped by Assad's helicopters have been maybe the number one driver behind the refugee crisis. So that's hardly real appealing. We're looking at Russia and the United States sparring over strategy in the Middle East. Al in Oklahoma City. Thank you for calling, Al. You're on.
Hi, Tom. I think, Dimitri, your previous caller was spot on. I don't think that region is ready for the democratic experiment. And given that, I think that for the meantime, what we should do is be absolutely elated that the Russians want to get involved and dump it in their lap and let them deal with the quagmire for the next 20 years. And maybe it'll make it easier for us to solve the Ukrainian problem if they're tied down in the Middle East. Let them have whatever influence they want in Assad's regime, in Syria, in Iraq. Those are not our friends. Those are certainly not our allies. Let them deal with it, and we can go on our merry way and deal with something else.
Al, we've got it. I'm pretty sure that Russia's going to have a price it will ask to be, have paid for more freedom in Ukraine if it takes that on. But Josh Landis, what about that notion? No one's talking about, at the moment, the U.S. getting out and putting it in Russia's lap. But what about the very idea?
Well, I think there are people in Washington who are considering that notion that if the Russians want to get in there and do it, let them do it. And, you know, we have if I can paint a little picture of the concrete dilemma that's on the ground in Syria, the city of Palmyra, dead smack dab in the middle of Syria, desert city, surrounded by desert. Just last month, ISIS brought its troops from towards Iraq to surround Palmyra and took Palmyra from the Syrian government.
This is the one with all the great archaeological remains.
Beautiful archaeological Roman ruins there. And that have been blown up by ISIS since, and the director of archaeology was beheaded in a spectacular video. The United States was aware of this. And for 3 days, ISIS was sitting in the desert outside of Palmyra trying to destroy, to break into the village and into the city and drive out the Syrian regime. The United States did nothing. They did not bomb ISIS because it would have been helping Assad. We would have been helping. It would have destroyed our democracy, human rights promotion. All of our valued, our treasured values would have been taken a blow, and the Republicans would have had a field day on Obama. The domestic politics would have been all over the place. So the United States did nothing. They allowed ISIS to take and to hurt Assad and take this city. Now, the Russians are saying we shouldn't have done that, right? We should all be sharing intelligence, and America should be calling up Assad, and Assad should be calling up the Americans, and America should be dropping bombs for Assad to stay in that city and to take another city away from ISIS. America doesn't want to do that. And in a sense, at the bottom line, America made a decision that they'd rather have ISIS take that city from Assad than to be seen in the world supporting a dictator who uses barrel bombs on his own people.
Julianne, is there...
And that's a dilemma.
What do you make of the dilemma Josh lays out? And could it ultimately be that we leave Russia, I don't know, working with Assad and the U.S. going after ISIS, and there's a sort of division of labor that makes Washington feel better?
Well, I think on the question of whether or not we leave it to the Russians, I mean, the broader question of finding a political settlement in Syria is not going to be a Russian-led endeavor. Russia does not have the relationships it needs with the other regional, the Gulf allies in particular, partners across the Middle East. And so I don't see Russia leading the way on that front.
But they didn't have a relationship with Iraq like day before yesterday, and now they've got a control room in Baghdad.
Yeah. Well, again, I think we have to be careful about overstating what this so-called intel sharing really is. But on the question of how the U.S. is handling fighting ISIS versus supporting Assad, this is the hardest piece to it. And that's why, as the administration has tried to figure out how to fight ISIS, it has focused primarily on Iraq, where it is a much less complex situation. We have relationships with the existing government. We've been in that country for years on end. We know many of the players. We understand the regional dynamics. It's a much easier place to come up with a strategy. In Syria, obviously, we're faced with that dilemma. Do you go after ISIS knowing that ultimately strengthens Assad's hand? And I think that we've been unable to answer that question. We've had a couple of pinprick strikes. We've been engaged militarily here and there, primarily in the north, not in the center of the country, for that exact reason. We're deeply conflicted about anything that could help Assad at this point.
Ambassador Kornblum, just half a minute. If Putin does come in here in a way that's seen as effective, is he winning a free pass in Ukraine? Is that the quid pro quo?
No. Again, there are lots of examples one could mention. But the fact is, over the now 70 years since World War II, we have worked with all sorts of people on some things while we rejected them on others. This is what, in the end, skillful diplomacy is about. The problem is that we've been in a period of freeze, and so somehow Putin wants to get back in. Let's see if we can make it happen.
We'll see what kind of tab he puts on the table. Ambassador John Kornblum in Berlin, thank you very much for being with us today, sir.
Thank you.
Joshua Landis at the University of Oklahoma Center for Middle East Studies. Director there, Josh, thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure.
And Julianne Smith out of Washington, former Deputy National Security Advisor to Vice President Joe Biden. Thank you very much, Julianne.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for all your comment. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.